He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
To be honest, I was just watching, you know, playing with my phone, and suddenly the train went dark, and then it seems like someone has slammed the brake, and everything starts shaking.
It just seemed to be minor injuries on the back of the train. The rough part was in the front.
There are so many people worse off than me right now that I am not even...
Do you remember what car you were on?
I don't know. The two behind the cafe car.
I'm alive. I'm happy. And we know that we start counting all the members. They're all there. There's something we... I don't ask for more.
Was the train going too fast? Horror, panic, chaos, bloodshed, death as the New York-bound Amtrak derails as it's leaving Philadelphia. Six dead, 140 injured, eight critically, some still unaccounted for. CNN's Chris Welsh is on the scene in Philadelphia. Chris, thanks a million for joining us. So what's it look like?
Well, Harold, thanks for having me. It doesn't look good. That's an understatement, I guess. You know, you've seen the aerials of these cars. They look like mangled up toys, almost aluminum foil. One of them, at least, kind of unrecognizable as a train car. We know this morning that the NTSB has sent investigators. They are on the scene. They're going to begin their investigation. Of course, everyone wants to know what happened here. How did this happen? And there aren't any answers right now. There's a lot of questions or a lot of rumors. Was this train going too fast? We have heard from passengers who were on board that train who said it felt like it may have been speeding up as it head into this curve and as it then came off the tracks. We know, of course, all seven cars, including the engine, made it their way off this track. Some of them sort of flipping over more than others, others sort of laying on their sides. But we've just heard just horrific stories from passengers as they lived through this, being tossed around in their, like, toys. We heard one passenger said a couple of the seats even came unbolted from, you know, from their position in the car there. People were being thrown around. One man said when he woke up and sort of, well, not woke up, but when the car came to a halt, he sort of looked up and there were women in the luggage racks that fit above those chairs. So it just sounded like a nightmare kind of scenario. And I should tell you, too, we're waiting for our Mayor Michael Nutter here in Philadelphia to give a briefing where we hope to get some types of answers in terms of whether or not they may still be looking for people who are unaccounted for.
CNN's Chris Welsh is the reporter on the scene. Now, on that in that regard, Chris, in terms of people who are still unaccounted for, are they still sifting through that wreckage? Are they still looking for bodies underneath the superstructure of those crushed trains?
They are still sifting through the wreckage. I can tell you, though, it doesn't appear that they are going in and out of the cars with as much frequency as they were late last night and the early morning hours this morning. That seems to have slowed down a little bit. I don't know if that's any, you know, if we can take that as an indication that perhaps they don't believe that there would be anyone still trapped inside. But again, we're waiting for official confirmation from that, and hopefully that'll come within minutes.
CNN's Chris Welsh. Before I let you go, Chris, you know, we are getting at least one or two sources suggesting that the steel wheels of the train were squealing as it started heading into that curve. There's a 50-mile-an-hour speed limit on that curve. Have you heard anything else about the velocity of the doomed Metro North train?
In terms of the speed, we have not. We know that the NTSB will be looking first and foremost to recover those event data recorders from the train.
Chris, I'm going to interrupt you. Chris, let me interrupt you. I've got Jill Jorgensen, who is actually on the train. Jill, how are you doing, first of all?
I'm fine, Geraldo. I'm feeling pretty sore today, but very lucky to have been able to walk away from the train. A lot of people who were in the car that I was riding in to walk out. So feeling very grateful, very lucky today.
All right, let me, Jill, you just stand by. Jill's a fine reporter for the New York Observer. I'm coming right back to you. Now, Chris, have the federal authorities already arrived on the scene?
They have arrived on the scene. We do believe that they're going to be going through some of this wreckage this morning, most likely doing some types of interviews this morning, probably trying to get a hold of crew members who may be uninjured and able to be spoken to. We don't have word on what the conductor's possible state, possible condition is, but I can tell you now it actually looks like we are expecting to hear from the mayor within a matter of seconds here. It looks like there's a team of investigators sort of coming over to microphones here, so within a matter of minutes we'll know more.
right, Chris, I appreciate the reporting. Thank you very much. CNN's Chris Wells, thank you. Jill Jorgensen of the New York Observer, fine reporter. So give us your report. Tell us what you were doing and what you felt.
Sure. I was on my way back from Washington, D.C. I'd been in Washington yesterday to cover Mayor de Blasio's Progressive Agenda press conference. I was sitting in the quiet car, which is the second car of the train that carries passengers. And shortly outside of Philly, north of Philly, I was sitting on the aisle seat on the right, left-hand side, of the train. And, you know, we were going pretty fast, like full, you know, train speed. It didn't seem like we were going slow. And in front of us, I could see as we came to a curve that the train, I understand the curve went to the left, but for us in the train, all you could feel was the pull hard to the right. The train, the car in front of me, I could see it before it happened to our car sort of go off the rails and towards the right. And you could tell what was about to happen. And,
so you knew this disaster was unfolding. You knew what was happening.
Yeah. I mean, I was sitting on the aisle and I was looking ahead. So I maybe had more of a warning than some of my fellow passengers. Not that there's really anything you can do. I flew out of my seat. We went hard to the right. I flew out of my seat and across the train and kind of bounced around a lot. The lights went out. When we stopped, finally, it was very, very bumpy, like a lot of shaking. And when we stopped, finally, I was sort of caught underneath a chair. It seemed to me that the seats came loose from that they came out of the ground. And I was able to, after kind of catching my breath and making sure I wasn't going to hurt anyone around me, I was able to sort of pull myself up out from under the seat. And then those of us in the train who were able to walk, we started walking around trying to find a way, trying to just move through the train, which was toppled all the way over onto its side, almost upside down. And I found the emergency exit window that had popped open and was able to kind of climb up to it and yell out for help. And firefighters came eventually. It felt like a long time. It probably wasn't as long as it felt. And firemen came up and put a ladder up against the train. We were about 10 feet. The window was about 10 feet above the ground. And the fireman climbed up and helped me climb out the window, and my fellow passengers gave me a boost, and I was able to get out and walk away. But there were some people in the train who were in our car who were clearly very badly injured.
Jill Jorgensen is our guest. She's a reporter for the New York Observer in D.C., doing her job covering Mayor de Blasio and his presentation of the Progressive Agenda, taking the train, the Northeast Regional train, the Amtrak number 188, back from D.C., leaves Philadelphia Penn Station, and a few minutes later hits this curve, and something happened. Did you hear the steel wheels squealing as if the train was going too fast?
You know, I don't remember that. I mean, the entire experience once it started happening was very loud, but I didn't perceive any braking or anything like that, and I may have just missed it, in all of the chaos.
In terms of casualties in your car, you say there were people that were clearly more injured than you. First of all, what is your condition right now?
I'm fine. They took us to a hospital last night to check everybody out. They did some x-rays, but I'm okay. Very sore today, but I'm fine. Some of the people in my car, it seemed that the person right behind me had a broken leg. There were a few people who were really stuck, very stuck under the seats and who were having some trouble moving, and it seemed like there were some back and head injuries. A lot of people hit their head. I was very lucky I didn't hit my head. And there was one gentleman who was sort of, he seemed to be okay, but he was lying still in the middle of the car, and there was a lot of blood. So it was a really, really tough scene in there. And the firefighters were, and the paramedics were doing their best. It was hard to get into the train. I think they were doing their best to get in there and get everybody out as quickly and safely. I think all of us who were in the train were concerned about the possibility of a fire, something that did not happen, thank God. But, you know, that's sort of the next thing you start to panic about once you're able to get up.
Jill Jorgensen is our guest. She had the tragic circumstance where last night coming home from work in D.C. for the New York Observer. Jill was on the train on the doomed number 188 as it left Philadelphia. She describes in vivid detail what happened when that train derailed and she was tossed. Now, is that train lying on its side? Is that what you said, Jill?
Yeah, our car flipped all the way over onto its side, onto the right side. And I don't think, you know, it was over onto its right side and maybe even a little further than that. You know, I had sort of like the exit window was well above us. I had to sort of stand up on some edge of the car to pull myself up to yell out the window. And the window was about 10 feet above the ground with the train on its side when we were getting out.
So in terms of your reporting chops now, Jill Jorgensen, you know, what's your first question?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously I want to know what happened. You know, that was one of the first things that I said when I stood up in the train and I looked around and I just said, you know, how could this happen? How could something like this happen? And I have to say, for me as a reporter, it's been a really interesting experience. I've covered events like this before. I've covered train derailments and accidents, and I've certainly never been on this side of it. I've been getting a lot of phone calls from my colleagues in the media today. So,
well, you're giving an excellent report. I see why. Jill Jorgensen, I'm going to let you go. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, and take care.
Thank you.
The fairy godmother shined on you, or something happened that was good. And I'm glad you're okay, and I appreciate your report. Thanks, Jill.
No problem. Thank you very much, Aldo.
All right, let me take a break. We'll continue our special coverage of the disaster, the deadly wreck of Northeast Regional Amtrak train number 188. The wreck happening 9:30 last night. They're still counting the dead and injured. There are still some people missing. 8 are in critical condition. We'll continue to monitor their well-being as we give you the very latest on this disaster on the Northeast Corridor. Train service now stopped completely between Washington, D.C. and New York, canceled indefinitely on the nation's busiest rail corridor.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
I confirmed earlier, we know that unfortunately there are 6 deceased. I'm not going to get into where they were, where they've been transported. Our medical examiner has given us information.
This is Michael Nutter, the Philadelphia mayor.
I heard a voice over here.
By all accounts, the emergency services folks in Philadelphia did as good a job as they could have under the circumstance. Are we listening?
Is giving a statement or a report to the Philadelphia Police Department. I have no further information about the conductor or any other Amtrak personnel. Yes, sir.
From the NTSB, is there anything you can give us about the preliminary investigation into preliminarily what you're saying?
We know the black box has been recovered now. The trains have one, as well as aircraft. It's being analyzed right now.
Thank you. The question is,
the train crew,
preliminary information about that curve, and just as we've
that said, curve, we do know that it did spill on the curve. Now, the reports were coming in earlier, Noam Layden, that the train may have been going too fast, that people heard the steel wheels squealing. There's a 50-mile-an-hour speed limit on that curve. What do you know now?
Well, we know that investigators don't know, well, can't say whether it's NTSB or investigators on the ground here in Philadelphia, have spoken with the man who is behind the controls of that Amtrak train, and their preliminary investigation now will focus on speed as the main factor for the crash.
Speed is the main focus. If you know anything, if you are on that train, you ride that train on a regular basis, 866-HERALDO, we'd like to hear from you, 866-437-2536. Let me just recount the story I did back in the days of 2020. Everyone thinks of trains. You know, you have the occasional wreck. You've got the oil transport that blows, or you get the train that spills the toxic chemicals into the sensitive water area, or you had that Metro North train where the conductor was dozing off and the train was going too fast on that curve by Spuyten and Duyvil. Now, this sounds similar to that one. We don't want to speculate, but we're just telling you what our sources say is the first focus of the investigation. The speed that train was going and that curve, 50-mile-an-hour limit, Jill Jorgensen, the New York Observer reporter who was on that train, telling us that she felt it happening as it did, that the train was going, seemed to her, full cruising speed already by the time it hit that curve with such tragic results. You can just imagine what it was like, kind of a washing machine. People being tossed, there's no seatbelts, of course, on the train, tossed, ending up on the ceilings, in the luggage compartments.
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
Stevie Wonder singing for all of us. Busy news morning. We're monitoring the wreck of the Northeast Regional Train 188. Six dead. The NTSB is all over it. Opening a broad investigation into the cause of that fatal train derailment. We have just had word that about 35 minutes ago, not far from here, we're broadcasting to you from the corner, more or less, of 33rd and 7th Avenue, high above Madison Square Garden at 37th and 8th. There was a police-involved shooting. One person has been shot. The officers reportedly responding to a man attempting to hit a cop with the hammer. We think it's the same hammer maniac that's been waging these, or launching these unprovoked attacks with a hammer on civilians. A man who has bashed at least three total strangers with the hammer yesterday in a bloody spree has apparently been shot by the cops in the shadow of our studio here. We'll continue to monitor that, but just imagine you're the cop. You're looking for this nut job with the hammer, the bloody hammer, and he comes for you. What are you supposed to do? You know, given all the sensitivities right now, is a cop now going to be second guessing his or herself when attacked by a nut job like this guy? And this really, it sounds to me, reflects what we've been keeping a third eye on, the situation in Madison, Wisconsin, where the black prosecutor has just announced that he has decided not to prosecute the white cop who shot the young black man seven times, Madison, Wisconsin, killing the kid. The prosecutor, who again, a black man, said he's checked out all the facts and circumstances and said that the deceased, the 19-year-old who attacked the cop, was bent on wreaking havoc on the cop, had already given him a concussion. It's a hard time to believe policeman, isn't it? And tonight, there'll be the 27th annual Candlelight Vigil tonight, honoring the cops who have fallen in the line of duty. It's being staged by the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. The chairman and CEO of that fund, Craig Floyd, joins us now. Craig, welcome. First of all, I've got my statistics are 48 cops fatally shot in the line of duty last year compared to 33 the year before that. Is there a war on cops?
I think it's more dangerous for law enforcement today than we've seen in quite some time. When you look at the cold-blooded attacks, ambush-style killings of police officers in this past year, 15 officers of those 48 you mentioned that were shot and killed last year were killed in ambush-style attacks, killed simply because of the uniform, the badge they wear. They were unprovoked attacks, and that's triple the number from the year before. And obviously, I think it's more than a coincidence that there's been so much anti-government, anti-cop rhetoric this past year. Sometimes words do matter, and weak-minded individuals are sometimes influenced by that sentiment, and they go out and attack these officers and sometimes kill those officers. And unfortunately, we saw it happen 15 times last year, most vividly and shockingly in New York City when Wen-Jin Liu and Rafael Ramos were killed last December.
And Brian Moore getting shot in the face last week. I met his parents at the wake, a tragic situation. Do you feel, aside from the physical attacks that cops are enduring, my guest Craig Floyd, the head of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, do you feel that the rhetoric is inspiring these attacks, the kind of hateful anti-cop rhetoric that's resonating? You think that that's giving license to some marginal characters to go and take out their bloody ambitions on cops?
Well, I think there was certainly evidence of that fact in the Wen-Jin Liu and Rafael Ramos killing, where the killer actually went online using social media and expressed his hatred toward police and said he was going to put wings on pigs and just some terrible statements. This was a cold-blooded killer. He was a thug and somehow hiding behind this this anti-cop sentiment. Yeah, we have to be careful about what we say. Our officers are taken for granted far too often, Geraldo. I know you're a great supporter. But let's look at the statistics. Of the 44 million contacts that officers have every year in this country with the public, traffic stops, calls for service, arrests, you name it, they use or threaten the use of force less than 2% of the time. There was a study done years ago. It found that the average New York City cop would have to serve 697 years on average before they'd ever shoot and kill a criminal suspect. It hardly ever happens. Last year in New York City, of the 400,000 arrests that officers made, they used their firearm 42 times. That is a minuscule amount. They show great restraint almost all of the time, and yet we're not getting that impression from the media reports and from the politicians and so many others.
Craig Floyd, my guest, the head of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. You know, you had a situation where just now we are reporting at about 5 minutes after 10, there was a shooting right here in Midtown on the west side. A guy wielding a hammer came after a cop. The cop finally shot him. Our cops now in the situation sounds a lot like this Tony Robinson Jr. case out of Madison, Wisconsin, where the black prosecutors just said he's not going to charge the cop because the cop acted lawfully. You think the cops are going to start second-guessing themselves when confronted with a potentially deadly force for fear that a prosecutor will throw the book at them the way they did in Baltimore recently?
Well, that's a big concern, obviously, that if you're going to second guess and criticize every officer that ever has to use force of any kind, then yeah, I think they're going to put a question mark in those officers' minds. What I worry about is it's going to make them maybe think twice, and then that split second that they are being cautious and waiting, all of a sudden the criminal gets the drop on them, and that officer is now dead. We saw it 48 times last year. We've seen this year that already 12 officers shot and killed. Brian Moore, certainly a vivid reminder there in New York City. The two officers in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, LaCorey Tate and Benjamin Dean just a few days ago killed in a traffic stop situation. Every officer, none of them know when that life-threatening moment may come, but they know it could come on the very next call. And more than 100,000 officers are injured each year. One officer is killed somewhere in America every 60 hours. And yet there are 900,000 men and women serving in law enforcement today, risking their lives for our safety and our protection. And this week, especially National Police Week, we owe it to those officers and their families to say thank you.
All right. I appreciate it. Craig Floyd, thank you very much. How do we honor this vigil you're having tonight?
Well, go to our website, lawmemorial.org, and you can sign up to actually watch the candlelight vigil tonight at 8 p.m. live as it's happening over the internet. It's free, but you have to register and sign up on our website. So that's lawmemorial.org, a great way to pay your respects to the 117 officers who died in the line of duty across America last year.
Lawmemorial.org. Craig, thanks. Good luck.
Thanks, Geraldo.
Okay, mate. We're seeing now that the hammer wielder who's been shot was shot in front of a school. I'll give you the details. The school now on lockdown. Busy, busy morning. We'll be right back. The New York Post and others identifying the hammer-wielding man as David Baril, a 30-year-old. He has been shot and wounded by a cop near the corner of 37th Street and 8th Avenue. This happened right around 10 a.m. The officers recognizing the suspect from the pictures released by the NYPD. He attacked them with a hammer. They shot him. He's in the hospital. We'll be back after this with more.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Richie Valens, his birthday would have been 74 years old. Richie Valens, frozen forever as a teenager. The day the music died, Richie Valens. So we're tracking this horrific train disaster. Northeast Regional Train 188 derailing shortly after leaving Penn Station. New York City cops have shot and wounded the hammer wielder. But what is it like in Penn Station? Let's start there. Noam is down there. What's it like, Noam Layden?
You know, it's a lot quieter than it normally would be at 11 o'clock on a Wednesday morning because lots of people would be running to catch, you know, an Acela Express that was set to leave at 12 noon, but it's been canceled. I see another XL Express that's for 12:03. That's been canceled. And just, I'm looking at the arrival boards, and it's one canceled after another, except for New Jersey Transit. Everything seems to be down. And I talked to the Amtrak's doing pretty proactive down here. They've set up a whole bunch of customer service booths. As you can imagine, there's a fair amount of people showing up here that have no idea about the train derailment this morning or wondering what's going on. And so they're giving them information, but the information's not good. They're saying it's going to be days until the Northeast Corridor is up again between Washington and New York.
Any word yet on increased traffic on the turnpike, buses, aircraft, things of that nature? Is it just too soon to tell, Noam Layden?
Well, here's what they told me is the best way. They can get you to Philly, and then you're on your own. So you can take New Jersey Transit to Trenton. And then from Trenton, you can get on a SEPTA train, which is the Philadelphia version of New Jersey Transit, and take it to Philadelphia. And then I said, so what happens after you get to Philadelphia? And he looked at me and said, I don't know. So you can get as far as Philly. So you can imagine it's a huge disruption. If you're not an Amtrak goer, let me tell you how popular Amtrak is on the Northeast Corridor. There are tons of trains every day. There are people who make the commute between New York and Washington like a regular commute every single day back and forth. And the business, of course, we've done between Washington and New York every day is, you know, it's volumes of that. People going, it's the easiest way to get in from Midtown Manhattan to downtown Washington, D.C. is Amtrak. And while Amtrak is not very popular across the rest of the country, it's overpopulated in the Northeast Corridor. So this is huge to have it down for more than a day. And they're telling me it's going to be days.
I use that train all the time. I went back and forth to Baltimore just last week. During the rioting and the disruption that followed, the Amtrak corridor vital to life in the Northeast. This is just going to be no end of headaches. That beside the fact that you have six people dead and people still missing. What about them missing there now?
Yeah, so we know of one person. Initially, they had told us there was four or five people missing. Now we're just hearing of one person, and we can confirm that she is missing. Now the question is, where is she? Her name is Rachel Jacob. She's from here in Manhattan, And she got on the train, the 188 in Washington last night. And her parents now all over the place trying to get, you know, social media, TV, radio, trying to get the word out there that they're looking for her. They've contacted hospitals, of course, in Philadelphia, thinking that maybe something has happened to her. No hospital has any record of her. They don't have a record that she actually bought a ticket with a credit card. So, but they're positive that she got on the train. They're 100% positive she was on that train. And so as of now, she's been filed under the missing. They just don't know where she is.
All right. Well, let's stay on that one, too. Numb laden at Penn Station as we continue to track the disaster. Happened 9:30 last night. 6 dead. Many, many injured. 8 were in critical condition. Some still missing. I know you stay on that. Our buddy Ray and Riker is about to have some information about the David Burrell, the nut job, the hammer-wielding nut job shot by a cop just at about 10 o'clock, just about an hour and 10 minutes ago. Ray, welcome. What do you know?
Well, this is the thing. You know, you're right in reference to most people are going to say, well, why didn't they shoot him in the leg or the cop is going to be questioned? There's an FBI stat. It's called the 21-foot rule, which means that an assailant with an edge weapon, a knife, or a blunt instrument, in this case a hammer, can reach you in 1.5 seconds, 21 feet in 1.5 seconds. That's why, you know, we don't shoot to wound you or anything like that because you're still a danger.
No, I get it, man. You got to walk a mile in a cop's shoe to understand what that's like.
You know, real quick, two quick points, real quick. Are you doing the Geraldo beer thing this year? I would love to attend if possible.
Okay, right. We'll get your name. What else? Okay. What's the second point?
And lastly, listen, yesterday, I hear your show every day. When I can, I call. But, you know, lastly, you said yesterday you wasn't really too, you know, you wasn't that offended with de Blasio, you know, traveling out of state. I am, because he's doing that on our dime. I mean, Bloomberg did it on his own dime. This guy, de Blasio, he's treating New York City like Expedia.
No, I know, but I just, I don't listen. I have no big love for Mayor de Blasio, just to cut people some slack from time to time. He's a politician. He's been a politician his whole life. He's never had a job, de Blasio. He's been running for office since he was born. And now he's, he's into phase 16, broaden national profile. Doesn't irk me. Former police commissioner Bernard Carrick joins us. Aside from the fact that he's been a regular on that train, he also knows about police shootings. Let me do the train first, Bernie. What was your reaction when you heard about this disaster just north of Philly?
Well, I think it's tragic. I think it was a horrible night for a lot of people. The loss of life. I'm on that line about once every 2 weeks. I've taken that train a number of times, and it's just terrible. But I will tell you, I was quite impressed with the first responders. Mayor Nutter's press conference last night, his briefing, the first responders, the way they got in and out of there, the rescue part of the operation last night, very well coordinated, very well thought out. Police fire led the event, the incident, if you will, and had incident command. But very, very well done, in my opinion, from an outsider looking in.
Former police commissioner Bernard Carrick is my guest. The cops just about an hour and 15 minutes ago, commissioner shooting and wounding, I think a head wound, David Burrell, the guy described as the hammer maniac, who had wielded that hammer 4 times, 4 unprovoked attacks. Finally, cops shooting him. The cops will be asked why they use deadly or potentially deadly force. Why not a taser or some such? Why not shoot to wound? It's very similar to that story that's happening here in New York with what's happening in Madison, Wisconsin, where they just announced that the white cop will not face criminal charges in the shooting and killing of the 19-year-old unarmed biracial kid. So what about a guy's got a hammer, guy's got a knife?
Well, listen, a hammer could be used as deadly force. We've seen it happen before, number one. Number two, you don't shoot to wound. You don't shoot to kill. You shoot to stop. That's what you're trained in the academy from day one. And in that case, that's what these guys did. They stopped them from coming after them. We'll see what happens from this point on. But I didn't see the event. No one has at this point, but I think the use of deadly force was justifiable if he was attacking them or coming after him.
48 cops fatally shot in the line of duty last year. I know, you know, your own Joey's a Newark SWAT member. You have the curious experience of not only having faced it yourself, and now you go to bed wondering about your own kid.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. Listen, last year there was a major, major spike in cops being gunned down in this country. You know, we've had three or four in the last week, 2 weeks. You know, it's a problem. And every day these men and women go out there, put their lives on the line, and they're getting bashed for doing their jobs. You know, I'm not saying they're all perfect. But
train one. Day,
you got to give them the benefit of the doubt and let them do their jobs and let justice take its course.
All right, mate, I appreciate it. Bernard Kerik, former police commissioner.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Train crash. Tracking a police shooting right here in Midtown Manhattan. Demonstrators started to gather in Madison, Wisconsin in protest of the announcement that a cop will not be facing criminal charges for shooting and killing an unarmed black man. It's Phil in Queens calling 866 Geraldo. What's on your mind, Phil?
Hey, how you doing? You know, this is a terrible thing that's happening with the cops. There's going to be a demonstration today in Queens near the 105, about 7 o'clock. It's part of the national vigil for, you know, just to appreciate cops and to mourn Officer Moore's death.
Officer Moore was a cop based at the 105 precinct in Queens. Go ahead, Phil.
Right. And also, just, you know, we need more cops in New York. I participated in the late 90s with Alice Rivlin, a famous economist, been, you know, worked for the presidents and governors and this and that. There's supposed to be 50,000 cops in New York City once it hit 8 million officially. And, you know, we need more than 1,000 cops, and we need smarter policing. You know, in the old days, by the Midtown Tunnel, they used to have veteran cops, and they could spot things. They could spot everything from the expired registration to this truck looks like it's too heavy or this or that. And they had the cop there. You know, he was supposed to retire after 9/11. I think he came back for two or three more years because you needed that expertise. You need the veteran cops, but you need to have the right number of cops. And if the city wants to be safe, listen, the people who suffer are the poor blacks and Latinos because that's where most of the crime occurs. But you get robberies in, you know, Midtown at gunpoint. You get the crazy hammer guys, and we need more cops on the street, and there used to be more cops on the street.
Maybe that would be an issue. Phil, I appreciate it. Excellent call, and of course, we will all remember cops. Tonight's a good night to remember cops. 27th Annual Candlelight Vigil tonight, May 13th. Just remember, just pause for a couple of seconds. Remember what they do for all of us. Tonight, the Candlelight Vigil remembering the 48 cops fatally shot, thank you, Phil, in the line of duty last night. Hey, Will, what's up? What are you thinking about? Thanks for calling.
I'm sorry, it's Lou. They got my name wrong.
Okay, Lou, what's up?
Hey, how are you? I haven't talked to you in a bit. You know, just as we're talking about this, we should remember that as our Mr. 17% of the electorate, that's what he got voted on, because only 25% of the electorate showed up to vote. Mr. de Blasio is out, you know, giving us the face of progressive thinking or whatever, and meanwhile he denied the city 1,000 new cops. I think we should keep that in mind in the next election.
I think that's an excellent point, Will. I think that as we recall the mayor, you know, I don't get excited when they do political things, but it does remind you, does it not? I mean, this is where you really want a proactive mayor. You had a guy, you know, the police had to shoot a hammer-wielding maniac. It would be a good time for the mayor to go by the precinct, say, hi, how you doing? Pat a couple of caps on the back. I've just survived an encounter with a hammer-wielding maniac. You have a train crash where many New Yorkers, many city residents' lives disrupted by this horrible train crash, you know, this would be a good time for the mayor to, you know, maybe be down in Penn Station saying hello to people whose lives have been inconvenienced. You can. All right, you got Bill Bratton speaking now about the hammer wielder, the shoot down of David Baril by the cops.
Pulled out a hammer, and directly behind me in the street is that hammer, and attempted to assault the female officer with the claw end of that hammer. This has all been captured on one of our Argus cameras videos on the light pole directly to my left. So we have very significant video evidence of what transpired in the next 3 to 5 seconds. The female police officer started to back up into the intersection, fleeing the assault. She fell down. Her partner officer shot the suspect twice. He is now at the hospital being treated for those wounds. I want to commend those two officers for their actions this morning. First, in seeing the suspect, approaching him, and then secondly, for the quick action on the part of the officers, but particularly the male officer, who, based on the preliminary video that I reviewed, might possibly save his partner's life by shooting the suspect. Chief Aubrey will give you additional details, and again, this afternoon, we will give a more in-depth briefing at 3 o'clock at a location here in Manhattan. With that, Chief Aubrey, I'm going to be stepping away. I want to go down to the hospital, visit both officers that they are being treated down at the hospital. No serious injury to either officer at this time. The female officer does have an abrasion that may have been caused, and will be part of our investigation, by the hammer striking her, or possibly in the fall that she took in the intersection while attempting to flee from his blows. With that, Chief Aubrey, please.
37th Street, 8th Avenue.
This all began on Monday when four individuals were struck with a hammer by, at the time, it was an unknown male. What we did is we did an investigation. It was
a deputy chief of this department, William Aubrey,
led us to learn the identity of who this male was. These police officers here today knew the identity of the person that we were looking for, and they responded to an unrelated assault on 38th and 8th Avenue. As they were leaving that assault, they exited the location, and they saw the individual that was wanted for the four attacks. They followed him southbound on 8th Avenue. And at the corner of 37th and 8th Avenue, the individual that they were following abruptly turned around and pulled out the hammer. It's a white metal claw-type hammer that's in the middle of the street at 37th and 8th. When he turned around, he pulled out the hammer and violently started swinging the hammer at the female officer.
Geraldo, live, local, today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
Okay, welcome back. 39 after 40. Make that 40 minutes after 11 o'clock on this busy news morning. Al in Morristown's on the line. What's up, Al? What are you thinking about?
Yeah, Geraldo, this has become almost like a cliche. We need more cops. We need more cops. We need more cops. We don't need more cops. We have about 40,000 when you throw in the transit police and the housing police. What we do need is for the judges to stop releasing these violent criminals. Not batting this guy with a hammer attack. He's been in and out of prison for violent crimes in the past. If they keep him locked up, then the cops won't have to keep rearresting him. And I have another point to make regarding the woman police officer. Anytime you have, I wouldn't say anytime, and most times when you have a male and female team, it's the male who takes the guy down, because the women have been put on through affirmative action and quotas, and many of them are just not up to the job.
Well, I tell you, I don't know about that. I believe that, you know, I understand some people think that, and when you do see cops these days, they're not like the cops were when I was a young man. All the cops were bigger than average, and obviously all men. The force now reflects the community it serves, and hopefully that reduces friction between cops and the community. You know, I otherwise wouldn't comment. I think you really have to examine case by case to determine whether or not that oft-cited cliche is true. Willie in New Jersey, what do you think about Willie? Oh, I just hung up on Willie. Willie, call back. I didn't mean to cut you off here. One thing I want to mention before we get back to our main topic is, you know, Sandra Lee, the lovely girlfriend of Governor Andrew Cuomo, revealed yesterday that she has breast cancer. You know, she just out of the blue, she talks about how she was taking a photo shoot for People Magazine's Most Beautiful edition, and she learned of her diagnosis just hours after being photographed as one of the most beautiful people for People Magazine. You know, and it just goes to show the main point that Sandra, and she's fighting bravely, and I tell you, just ran into the governor at Brian Moore's wake. Seemed like a very nice guy. I hadn't spoken to him in a while. I mean, obviously, we've had our political differences, but we wish them the best on a human level. He says he was devastated by the diagnosis. He took Sandra. They've been together 10 years. He took her off to the Turks and Caicos for a three-day holiday. But Sandra's main point and the point she wants everyone to stress is, if you have not, you're a woman age 40 and you don't have a family history of breast cancer, by age 40, you should still get a mammogram. It was a mammogram that tipped Sandra Lee to the fact that there was cancer present in three different places in her breast. She's going to have a double mastectomy this week. And then after reconstructive surgery, go on with her life, hopefully. And wish her the best, and just urge everybody, you know, all you ladies out there, if you've had a family history of breast cancer, obviously do it earlier. But with no history of breast cancer in your family, still by age 40, you should get a mammogram. One, Sandra Lee is crediting with saving her life. So we give our best wishes to the network. The Food Network star, 48-year-old Sandra Lee, the girlfriend of Governor Andrew Cuomo. This thing about the 1,000 cops, no, I think that it is crucial that we heed the advice of Bill Bratton. I trust Bratton. Bratton is a guy who has spanned the various tenures of people coming from very different ideological bases, from very different political backgrounds. Bratton has been around. He's been the chief here a couple of times, Boston, Los Angeles. And if Bratton is saying he needs 1,000 cops, and if the city council is saying they need 1,000 cops, I mean, who are we to say you don't need 1,000 more cops? You know what I mean? I understand fiscal emergency, but I also understand, as Bill de Blasio tells the story of New York in his national travels, that he's suggesting that the fiscal situation in the city is better than it has been, that revenues are higher than expected, that there is some discretionary funding available within the vast city budget. I just don't understand why Mayor de Blasio isn't heeding the advice that seems to be coming from across the political spectrum. Why not do it? You know, And this is where these national gallivanting and travels and speechifying and political philosophy and, the progressive agenda and all the rest of that stuff makes him look bad. Because here you have a very basic retail problem. You have a problem where people are fearful that violent crime is ticking up. There is money in the budget to do this. Why not allow the police department to expand to, it's not even going near its historic heights. The city population isn't 8 million. It's 8.4 million people. The city is bursting at the seams. Why not do this? And to go and esoterically be presenting your philosophical agenda in far-flung metropolises across the land, I don't think this is a way to guarantee the loyalty and the love of New Yorkers who want to know why the hell you're not here doing your job on a situation that is this critical.
You wonder where he's getting his information from, right, of his own police chief. He chose Bill Bratton. He convinced Bill Bratton to come to New York, back to New York. He convinced him to come back here. So who is he getting his information from? I saw him up there saying that he didn't believe that more cops were needed on the streets and the money could be used better to fix some huge holes in the housing projects where there's lots of problems with mold and needed emergency funding. He says the money be better spent there. That's his argument.
I understand the argument, but isn't he making the argument? First of all, if your city council, which is arguably the most democratically representative body in city government, it's like the Congress, you may hate the Congress for being dysfunctional. You may hate the city council for the same reason, but each city council district has elect someone. There are, what are they, 30-odd members of the city council. If a vast majority of them are saying add more cops,
with all of the disparate constituencies that they reflect and represent. And your police commissioner is saying add 1,000 more cops. I just don't know where the mayor gets his information to counteract that.
You know, I would ask him. Oh, but he's in California today, so I can't ask him.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-GERALDO, 77 WABC.
For me today. Let's get ready to rumble!
Jab a bit more effective than the left hand from Stallone brings a rise from the crowd. Geraldo backed up against the ropes. Rivera told me he was going to try to run in the first round, but got to fix Geraldo's hip here. Oh, Stallone goes down. No, it's ruled a knockdown. It's ruled a knockdown. Geraldo scores the knockdown in round number two. Geraldo cuts off with a jab, and now Stallone has to be angry. He thought it was a slip. And he's going all over Geraldo. And then backs him into the corner once again.
All right, it was a fight 23 years ago. Howard Stern instigated it. Me and Frank Stallone. Frank Stallone, Eye of the Tiger Stallone. Unlike Rocky, unlike Sylvester Stallone, who's a good guy I've known for years, Frank's a real fighter, semi-pro, light heavyweight. So Howard egged me on, even though I was only a middleweight. And we fought, it was at 40th and 8th Avenue, the old boxing gym. It's a big, big restaurant now. But it was a lot of fun. I think it was my last official fight.
How'd you do?
He won by unanimous decision. But he didn't knock me down.
What'd they do, three rounds?
Three rounds, and it felt like 300.
I remember that. I do. I remember that fight. I mean, because Howard was huge. Not that he isn't anymore, but that morning show ran the city. I mean, he had numbers like people would dream about his numbers.
Right.
And so everybody was watching. Everybody was listening, rather, that day to see what happened.
And it's we posted the video. It's on Geraldo.com if you want to check it out. One other announcement. Save the date for the 28th annual Geraldo Golf Classic. It's coming soon, Monday, June 22nd, in fact, at the beautiful private Edgewood Country Club in Rivervale, New Jersey. I'll be broadcasting live from there that day. Registration begins this Friday, so you make sure you sign up early to secure your spot. Be a great day to benefit Life's Work. That's the great charity that I've been working with. That's what we raised the money from the Celebrity Apprentice for, Life's Work. They do a lot of work with the developmentally disabled, now focusing particularly on the autistic. So we hope to see you there at our big golf event, Monday, June 22nd. Go on WABCradio.com to sign up. All right, we'll follow the breaking news here on 77 WABC, the cop shooting the crazy hammer guy and the latest on the train. See you tomorrow.